Today's daf in Masechet Yomah is daf Ayin Hey, and we are right at the third line. So we've been talking about the various sukkahs that Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi actually argue about in Mishlei, and how they understand various sukkim. So we continue with other inyanim that they argue about. Da'agabalav ish, believe ish, if there is a worry in someone's heart, the thing to do is yashchena. Now, the pashta meaning is yashchena. He should force it down. He should squash it and kill it. But Rabbi Ami Verbasi say that the idea of yashchena is yaschena midato. What do you mean? How do you squash a worry exactly? So one says it means you should just move it out of your mind. Do other things with your mind, like the Rambam says. And the learning of Torah takes a person into a completely different world. And v'chadamah, the other one says it's a lashon of sicha, yisichena la'achirim. Talk it over with other people. So either other be the very fact that you talk it over always makes things seem better, that you got it out and you faced it and you spoke about it. Or as Rashi says, if you discuss it with other people, then they may give you an etzah teva and help you out. Another pasuk that they argue about, Rabbi Amir Rabasi, the nachash afar lachmo. So what does that mean? I mean, obviously a snake doesn't literally eat dirt. Rabbi Amir Rabasi, one of them says it means that afilu ochel kol ma'adanei olam. The snake can be eating the most delicious things in the world, but he doesn't taste it. That's the point. To'im b'hem ta'am afar. In them, what he tastes is just the taste of dirt, so that there's no havchana in the taste. V'chadomar, afilo ochel kol ma'adanei olam, ein datom yushevet alav, ad yochal afar. That a snake, even though it may eat the most nourishing and delicious things in the world, it never has a sense of really belonging, of connecting to its food, until it actually gets a little bit of the taste of dirt with it. And note, Tanya, it says in the bright summer of Yerzi Borei, Shaloki midat HaKadosh Baruch Hu midat Basar Vadam. Take a look how different HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, even in the most painful things, than a human is. Because midas Basar Vadam, if somebody is after you, somebody has hurt you, Magnit et Chaviro, Yoredim Alachayav, you try to destroy him, you try to bust him wherever you can, you take away his parnasa, anything at all. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu ain't okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though he had to be mekalel et hanachash, but take a look at the klola, at the good part of the klola, because by making it up for lachmo, it means that wherever he goes, ole lagag, mizonot avimo, yored lamata, mizonot avimo. Everything about the nachash, wherever he goes, he basically has access to that food. Same thing is true about Kenan. Kilel et Kenan, ochel mashrabo ochel, shote mashrabo shote. It's fine, okay, he's a slave. But in his slavery, he basically ends up being supported by his Odin, and he's on the same madrega in terms of his food of his Odin. And Kilila Taisha, HaKorot Sinachareya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu curses the Chava and Gan Eden, and the whole world is chasing after women as if like this is the most important thing in the world. So you see, a Klola still, nonetheless, leaves an awful lot of bracha. Kilila Ta'adama, in cursing the Adama itself after the Chet of the Eitz Hadas because of the Shinui of the mitzvah of Tama Eitz Kepri HaEitz, and Akoni Zonine Mena, nonetheless, the entire world requires the Adama to say, and they have to be Mevorech HaAdama, Borei Pri HaAdama. Then getting back to the Manan, note, by the way, that all of the Inyonim that we've been discussing, take a look at how connected they are to the inyanim of Yom HaKippurim. The aspect of Yom HaKippurim, remember, is Moshe Rabbeinu's creation of Inui. Take a look at how the Gemara, I mean, it's just brilliant. So what the Gemara did is it derived the concept of Inui from the man. L'man anotecha, vaya'ancha, vaya'riveka. The man, of course, is the creation of Moshe Rabbeinu as well. These two things, in a sense, are the opposite, in that our perek begins with the idea of achila, and now everything that we're going to talk about, and that we've started on this daf, is achila. The question of curses, but how they relate to eating, And the same thing is true of the tikkun of chet in Yom HaKippurim, and that is connected directly to the month. So memela, we move over here to understand the month. Zacharnu et hadagah asher nochal b'mitzrayim chinam. So how did the month come about? When the Klal Yisrael starts complaining, you know, it used to be so much fun. We had all of that free fish in Mitzrayim. Free fish in Mitzrayim. How in the world do they have free fish? So Chanamar 1 says, actually, it really means that they had free fish because HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to give them, it was a nace that when they drew water out of the Nilus, they would get these little fish with them that they were able to have all the time. That was one of the signs that the Shekhinah was with them. V'chanamar arayot. But the other one says, now, fish is always a lashon of reproduction, right? V'yidgu l'rov b'kerav ha'aretz. So what it's referring to is that Klal Yisrael was complaining that there's no sex around here. It used to be so much fun back in Mitzrayim. What would that mean? So, well, first of all, let's take a look at the Makar. Man di'amar dagim dichtib nochal. I mean, it's just to eat. Eat means eat, lest I heard. Man di'amar arayot, it says chinam. How do you get free things? You don't get free fish in Mitzrayim, do you? So now, man di'amar arayot, how do you explain nochal? Well, that we often find that sex is used, eating is used as a euphemism. Lishnam al yanaka dichtib. Talking about a woman who's committing adultery. So it says, yeah, she goes and she eats, and then she wipes her mouth, and she says, I didn't do anything wrong. Obviously, the whole context over there, it's talking about that she seduces somebody. And what about Laman Yomer Dagim? So how indeed is the Dagim free? Because indeed, Davi Maitenu Nefkera, they used to get fish for free. The Yomer Markisha, Yu Yisrael Shoavi Maim in Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mazmin lahem betoch hamayim dagim ktanim b'chadehem. So they would find in their pitchers, they would find these delicious fish that they were able to eat, which were literally chinam. So he holds it's a reference to that medrash. Now, bishlam alaman yom dagim. I understand that certainly they didn't have too many opportunities to go fishing in the desert, that's for sure. But, I mean, the business about sex, I don't understand. First of all, I mean, they never, in Mitzrayim, they used to be Isaac and Arias, illicit sex, Arias. On the contrary, we find that Klal Yisrael is very careful not to be nichshal in Mitzrayim. Arayot lo pritzi behem. Doesn't it say in the Pasuk, Gan na'u lachoti kala, Gan na'u mayan chatum? So that's a sign that they were very, very careful. They were chaste. They were like a locked garden. So we talk about the women as if they were completely closed off to anybody but their own husbands. So I don't understand. I mean, according to the Man Yomer Arayot, how do you explain the fact that it says Mayan Chatum, that they were sealed? That means that there was no way either a virgin was sealed or a married woman was sealed, but there was certainly no opening to promiscuousness. Ah, of course not. But Mehanech Da'asirin Lo Pritzibu, obviously in Mitzrayim, when the Pesuk is Mishabeach, the Darg of Klal Yisrael, there was no promiscuity and a woman who was prohibited, that's for sure. But remember that at the time that they were in Mitzrayim, they were only B'nai Noach. And B'nai Noach are not Osir in all of the Arayis that B'nai Yisrael are Osir in. They're not even considered to be related to many of the people that are Arias to us. They're biologically not viewed as necessarily an Erva. And therefore, after the Torah was given, so then they got very miserable. I mean, what I used to have this wonderful relationship, and now she's a surah to me, and so on. That's what it's referring to. So Bishlam Laman Yomer Arayot, that the meaning of Zacharnu et hadagah arayot, that makes sense, because at the end, it basically boils down to Vayishma Moshe et ha'am bochel mishpachotav. What do you mean the mishpachotav? About their families. Their families mean family relations. Aliske mishpachotav. And now they're not allowed to be sleeping with these people that they had such a nice time with before. Because now Nesrulahem lishkam etzlam. They're now not allowed to sleep with them. Elalamandi omar dagim. And this means literally to sleep with them, right? I mean, just like you have to be misrachik from Arias. So these were the girls that like used to keep you company in bed and so on, all of your sweet relatives, you know. And now all of a sudden they become usher. That's horrifying. And the Mandi Omer Dagim, so why does it say Lemishpachotav? What do fish have to do with your family? I mean, unless we're talking about mermaids, but that's highly unlikely. So what exactly is Bochel Lemishpachotav? No, that's a different issue. In other words, we're certainly everybody's made it, that the aspect of Mishpachotav, yes, that was part of their misery and complaining and so on, is that, you know, all the nice people that we used to sleep, you know, we can't sleep with. But that wasn't Nogea the man when they said Zacharno Tadagash and Ochal, that was talking about fish. So there's two different issues here, but certainly Hava Havi, they were certainly unhappy about both things. Now, it's very strange that they mention certain things that they used to have in Mitzrayim. Okay, so we used to have all of these nice fish. We can't find any place to go fishing in the desert. Okay, that's sort of fair. But then it says, and we remember all of the Kishuim and all of the Avatichim. And what in the world? What? Watermelon? Like, okay, I understand you can't buy watermelon in the desert, but they did have them on. So why dafka these things like squash and melons and onions and garlic and kale? I mean, like, you know, why dafka these things they didn't have? Says Rabami Rabasi, again, remember we're still talking about all the Rabami Rabasis now. So why exactly do they complain specifically about these kinds of things? So Rabami Rabasi argue, Chadomar ta'am kol haminim ta'amu b'man, so one says, remember as we said yesterday, that the man was virtual taste, so they could taste everything, but they did not taste these things, onions, garlics, kale, watermelon, and so on. But chadomar, other species, tam kol aminim, they not only tasted them, but they actually experienced the substance of the thing. So it not only tasted like chicken, but it felt like they were eating chicken. But with these things, they did taste it, but it was very virtual taste. I mean, it was like powdered watermelon, you know? That's not exactly that watermelon slurp that you expect from watermelon. So that was the problem. And the reason for this, as we'll see later on, because these things were not good for nursing women. And of course, the man is nursing women, because that was the whole point of Moshe. Remember that Moshe complains about being a nursemaid. And it all started off, if you remember in the sugya, with the Badei Aaron being the breasts of a woman. And those were Keneged Moshe Aaron, who were nourishing Klal Yisrael with their level of milk, so to speak, which is Teret. Dvash v'chalav tachat v'sholcha. So that is, therefore, the things that the man couldn't taste like, because Moshe is a nursing mother. What's going to be able to give you stuff bad for a nursing mother? Anyway, and then it says, Vuhu kizera God lavan. So God, was white like God. God is like, normally translated as coriander in the Rishonim. So, but the problem is that coriander is not white. So how exactly does it say it was white like coriander? Omer of Asi, no. It was round like a coriander seed, but it was lavan. That's something else. It doesn't mean that both of them have to be. They're not adjectives that are both like coriander. The white was like a beautiful pearl. Tana Rabbana, God shedom lezera pishtan begiv olin. So when you're talking about the concept of God, it was like round the way that flax seeds are round, but while they were still held in the givol. So now this is a remez to the fact that I'm asking all of you to write your capsules, because this is basically the givolin are these capsules, they're actually called capsules, and they hold the man. And the man was nirmaz and terah, and that was Moshe, which means that when you send in your chedushei terah, they are meant to be in capsules, exactly like the man itself, which is why we have this gemara today in advance of our partial learning. So anyway, so that's what it was like. Acherim omrim, that God means shedomeh lahagadah. It was like learning in our Chumash discussion, another remez of the Chumash discussion. Shemoshechet libo shel adam kamayim, makes a person's heart flow, and you want to be able to participate in it and put it in a capsule. So basically, both pirushim are nogea. Another brisa, Tanya Idach, God means that it's like testimony, Haggadah, Shemagid lehem liYisrael. If you want a DNA test, the best DNA test is the man. Because you see that the man used to fall, remember, precisely, didn't matter how much you worked on it, no matter how much you would collect, you would always find precisely the same amount, Omer leGugola, right? So now if you want to do a DNA test, and the question is, whose baby is this? Well, take a look. Is it coming down an Omer leGugolet, including that baby in your family? L'mishpachoteihem, it's got to go according to the father, right? Or is that extra falling somewhere else, and that's the real father? So that's your perfect DNA test. And therefore, if you have a woman, let's say, who has her husband died, and she married somebody else, she didn't wait the requisite 3 months, and now she's not sure whether this is a child of father A or the recent father, father B, possibly. So then it depends. Where does the mum fall? So we can tell who the father is. So that's Magid Lehem LeYisrael, E Ben Tish Al Rishon, or whether it's a 7 month from the marriage, second marriage that she had. And when it says Lavan, it means Shemalbin Avonotehem Shel Yisrael, that it makes Klal Yisrael on a higher madriga, that they shouldn't have to worry about averes. Why is that? Because we'll see later in the Gemara that the constant connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ratzon. They needed to be always machniat levavam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give them food. And every day it fell again, and they recognized their total dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oichel, so that took away their averes. Tanya Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kishim Shahanavi Hayamagid Lehem Liyisrael, Masha Bachorinu, Masha Besedakin. The same way that a Novi could tell you things that are hidden underneath the carpet. Kachaman Magid Lehem Liyisrael, Masha Bachorinu, Masha Besedakin. So the Haggadah was much more than just DNA. Let's give you an example. Ketzad. Two people come to Moshe, and one of them says, "This guy stole my Evet." And the other guy says, "Stolen? I paid good money. You sold him to me." Says Moshe, "Okie dokie, tomorrow morning we'll see the answer." Sure enough, the next morning, it depends where the Omer fell. If the person that claims that it was his and that he bought it, if he gets that Omer, that's the sign that he had actually bought it. But if the Omer leGugolet, which covers, of course, one Zavodim as well, if it falls in the original owner's home, it's a sign that this guy stole it. So there we go. Lemacharim nimtza omero bebeit rabo rishon. So then beyadua sheze genavot. Im nimtza omero bebeit rabo sheni, then beyadua sheze mochrolo. So we always know the truth. V'chein, ish v'isha shebo lefnei Moshe ledin. A man and a woman come to Moshe. The man says she has basically bisorcha alai. She has to be divorced. She's been fooling around with somebody else. He omerit, no, he's the one who did things to me, and he's been treating me wrong, and he's just looking for an excuse to divorce me, and that way he doesn't have to pay my ketuvah, and he's a phony. Says Moshe, okay, we shall see in the morning. La boker mishpat. Lebachar, the next day, im nimtza omra bebeit ba'ala. So if the Baal still really wants to keep his wife, so then he's the one that will get the money for her because he wants to support her, except he has no choice because he has to divorce her. So then be yodua shehi sarcha alav. But if nimtza omra bebeit aviyah, that means that she's been rejected by him. So then be yodua shehu sarcha alav. That shows that he has rejected her. K'tiv. Now there's also a problem in the way the Torah describes. I'm sorry I'm talking so slowly, but I just want to make sure nothing is lost. It also, there's a problem in the description of how it is that the man falls. On the one hand, it says, "Uvredet atal al machaneh laila, yered aman alav." When the dew fell at night, as the temperatures dropped, the man fell on top of the dew. But yet it says the opposite. it says that the it would come down. Sorry, I jumped ahead. Excuse me. It says that when the dew fell, then the mon would come on it where it fell, meaning al hamachaneh. But on the other hand, there's the pasuk that says back in Shmos, v'yatsa ha'am v'laktu. They had to go out of the machaneh to find the mon. And then we have yet another pasuk, which is the pasuk before in Bamidbar. It says shatu ha'am v'laktu. They used to roam around at distances. Shatu means to go far away and collect it. So I understand. We have three separate pesukim. One says it fell in the machaneh. One says it fell outside the machaneh. And one says fell far away. Okay, tzad. So people who were tzaddikim, yorad al petach batehem. For people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the man to them personally, it fell right outside of their door. So they didn't have to look for it. And the people that were Beinonim, they had to go outside of the machaneh and they found it outside of the machaneh. For people who were Rishoyim, they had to go walking around for miles collecting the mon. They spent their whole day collecting the mon. So it must have been pretty terrifying to know what they think of you in the Shamayim, huh? Whew. Anyway, that definitely keeps you straight also. What a wonderful thing. Now, Ketiv, and we also have the question of what was the mon like? Because on the one hand, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls the man lechem. It says, hineni mavtir lechem lechem min hashamayim. It's like bread, right? And yet, on the other hand, the pasuk that we have here in Bamidbar says, shatu ha'am v'laktu ve'asu oto ugot. So then they made it into ugot, which are, okay, that means it has to still be baked and everything. And it also says, v'tachanu, they had to grind it, and it was mashma that it wasn't ugot, it was like grain. You had to go through the whole process, grinding the grain, sifting it, making flour and whatever. So which one was it? If they had to grind it, berechayim, how do you explain that? Okay, tzad, once again, if you're on a madrega of a tzadik, you got your beautiful challahs all ready for Shabbos, everything was nice, lecha mishnah. If you were a beinoni, okay, you still had to bake it, no? So it's like ugot. And Rishaim, they had to go and they had to spend the whole day preparing it, tachanu berechayim, and so on. Oh, dochu b'medochan. What does that mean? Or they would pound it in a mortar. I understand if it requires grinding, what is pounding in a mortar going to do? Omer v'yudah amarav, item revchama b'rebi chanina. This means the type of things that would be compounded in a pharmacy. In those days, it's where you bought, well, they still do that today. That's where you buy your perfumes and that's where you buy your deodorants and so on. So it was also dochu b'meducha. So these were ingredients that needed compounding into perfumes. And melamit shiorad lem liyisrael imaman tachshitei nashim, things that need pounding and preparing in a pharmacy. Davar shenidoch b'meducha. Then it says, u'bishlo b'parur, that they cook it in a frying pan. Wait a minute, I thought you said they baked it. I'm so confused. What is this stuff? No, Amar Rav Chana, that teaches you. Shiorad lem liyisrael im haman tzike kedera. That means that they also had soul food coming down with the man. You know, I mean, it wasn't just plain man. There's lots of very good New Orleans styles, tzike kedera, and sometimes that's what you feel like having. Vehine viu elav od nidava baboker baboker. This is strange. When it talks about the matana for the Mishkan, so it says every morning they would come and bring more gifts. What do you mean every morning? If you have what to bring, bring it. What's this baboker, baboker? What's wrong with the rest of the day? When you dafka come the first thing in the morning? What does that mean? Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. It means the stuff that used to come down every morning, which teaches us, Melamedshe, Aradlem, baboker, baboker, in the days in the morning with the man. Yardulem, Yisrael, Avanim, Tavot, Margali, Adim, Aman. So we said that the man was like pearls. Sometimes they tried eating it and it really was pearls. So then they decided they better give that to the Mishkan. So those beautiful things, those became matonais to the Mishkan. And furthermore, when it talks about the matonais to the Mishkan, it says, ha-nisiyim eviyu et avnei ha-shoah. The nisiyim, so b'pashtos, the nisiyim means the leaders of the Shvatim. But remember that the other meaning of the word nisiyim is clouds, right? And therefore we darshan, yes, it means literally, it used to rain these beautiful stones for the ephod. That's where it came from. So Tana, that it means nisim mamash. Actually, the clouds used to rain these things on them. V'chein hu omer, nisim v'ruach v'geshem ayin. And so we find also that when we talk about what, this is also from Mishlei, that, yeah, people that proclaim that they're giving tzedakah, you know, they get up there and they say in the shul, yes, and we're giving $1,800 to, yeah, so there's a lot of clouds, there's a lot of wind, but there ain't no rain because they never pay up. Okay, so that's what Shlomo HaMelech was comparing it to. Anyway, but meanwhile we see Nisim actually means cloud. Getting back to the taste of the man, Vayata'amo kitam l'shad hashamen. Now, a l'shad, that's very suspicious because a shad means a breast again. We're back to breasts. We're just like we were with the Aron HaBris and just like we were about the taste and so on. Exactly. Says Rebbe Abu, that means a breast. When a child suckles from a breast, so there's many different tastes in that milk. To'im ba kama minim, kama tamim, because whatever mommy ate, that's the taste that come out in the milk. Af haman kozman sheyisrael ochlim oto, as long as you keep eating the man, to'amim ba kama tamim, you could have the most incredible tastes in that man, whatever you want. Others say that no, it means l'shade mamash. It means shape changers, demons. And it's compared to a shape changer, just like a shade can change its shape to any shape that it wants. Mitapech l'kama gvanim. So you have different forms of shading. Afaman mitapech l'kama tamim. So the man itself was like a shade. Vayomer Moshe. So now there's meat in the evening and fresh bread in the morning. So Tana Mishmeta Rav Yeshua ben Korcha, look, what do you mean, but Erev? I mean, you need time to make a nice meal. What good is getting this meat in the evening time? Like, by the time you're ready to eat, it's going to be dark. So Barsa Shishalo Shaloka Hogan, look, there was no need to sit there and ask for meat, okay? First of all, you can get along perfectly well without meat because the man was very high in protein. We could take a look at the labels that came down with the money, you'll see. Very high in protein, no problem of needing meat. And besides that, if you really need meat, for God's sake, you've got so much meat of your own. Remember that they went out with all of this stuff. When they come into Eretz Yisrael, they're like, flowing with these cattle, flocks. They need place for grazing. What are you complaining about meat? So because they asked for something inappropriately, nitanahem shalokog, it was given to them in a very inappropriate fashion. Instead of getting your meat to you in time for you to prepare a nice supper, go ahead and rush and try to make something in time to eat, and then you're not going to be able to keep your intermittent fasting hot. And therefore, you're going to have to eat late. Which teaches you. First of all, the fact we take for granted that the meat was given in the evening, forget about whether it's the right time in the evening, okay? But the fact is, you've got these people that eat. I mean, we know what a breakfast is in South Africa with these boer, right? Oh my gosh. Oh man. Meat, steak, 15 eggs, as much fat as you could possibly put in there. Oh, gosh. This teaches you that is no way to eat breakfast. Okay, so we can. The time for your meat meal is towards the night, not for breakfast. But what do you mean at night? Didn't Abaye say you have to eat it in the daytime and otherwise you won't enjoy it? He said, if you finally manage to get a suda, don't eat it in the night, eat it in the day. No, he doesn't mean literally in the day. He just means eat it so that you can see it. I mean, if you've got electric lights or you've got candles, whatever, a candlelight dinner is absolutely acceptable and just as good as eating it in the day. So, that's what we're talking about. Omer v'achamayako, you know, before Moshe came along, you know what these Jews were like? They were like these Americans. pecking all day long. You know, I'm feeling peckish. You heard that word, peckish? Yeah, so that means they would peck around, you find a little thing to eat all day long. And of course, the weight definitely shows. So, b'tchila hayu Yisrael domim k'tarnagolim sh'menakrim ba'ashpa. They were like these chickens, you know, going around, peck, 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 and nibbling up whatever it is that they could find. Until Moshe came along and taught them how to eat like human beings, you know, zaya mensch. In the morning, you'll have your bread, your cereal, and in the evening, you'll have a meal. That's it. Now, the question about the meat, we also have a lot of contradictions. It's amazing how this whole thing is about meat, about bread, about eating, about how to eat, when to eat, all in the context of Yom HaKippurim. We're over there, that's the Ta'anut Nafshotechem. Okay, so Habasaro Deno Ben Shineim. I understand. One says, there they were, they hadn't even finished chewing the meat, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so angry, and they dropped dead on the spot. So, I mean, that's okay. That's terrible, right? Right away. But the other pasuk says, "At chodesh yamim." Oh, we'll give them a month. How is that? Well, look. If the people, obviously, were tzaddikim, then they weren't in the kivrot ha-tava. But the people who were benonim, okay, so they died right away. They didn't have to go through a month of agonizing stomach pains and so on. But the rishayim, it's starim v'ochi not chodesh yamim. Give them a month of pain from the slop. Then it says, vayishtichu. That means spread out on the ground. But Omer Yishlokish, al tikri vayishtichu, ela vayishchatu. They had to shecht it. Melamed shenitchai v'saneim shal Yisroel shchita. But this teaches us, it's a remez vayishtichu, that they deserve to be shechted with the way that they constantly complain. Shatoach. So then, when we have the loshen of the pasuk that they were, It was vayishtechu lahem shatoach. What's vayishtechu lahem shatoach? So, Torah Mishmei, the Rebbe Yeshua ben Korcha, al tikri shatoach, ela shachot. That comes to tell me that they were chayev to do shchita. Melamed shiyorad lahem leYisrael im haman davar shetoun shchita. This teaches us that the slav is a bird and needed to be shechted. Oh, my Rebbe. I understand. This is where you learn that you have to shecht it. V'alokvar ne'amar, look, it says beferish in Tehillim. V'yamter alehem ke'afar she'er u'kechol yamim of kanaf. It says he rained down meat on them as if it was dust, and birds with wings like the sand. Now, if they were birds, of course they need shechita, because as Rebbe said in the Braita, we know from the pasuk v'zavachta kasher tziviticha that you have to do shechita the way that I told you. Well, what is that way? I'm not telling you, because that's part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. But you know what I told you. If you want to be a tzaduki, you can claim you were never told anything and then explain the pasuk, idiot. Anyway, so Rebbe says, so what were those things that you were kasher tziviticha? Melameh, this teaches us that indeed the Kabbalah that we have, Nitztava Moshe al HaVeshet v'alakona. So he was told what Shechita means. That means the esophagus, it means the windpipe, and it means that when it comes to a bird, it has to be rove of either the esophagus or the windpipe. And with a behemoth, it has to be both trachea and esophagus, harov shnayim bebehema. Okay, so then we know, obviously, that it needs Shechita. Why would we need this pasuk to tell me Shatoach to be read Shachot? Elamat Talmud Lomar Shatoach. This teaches us that it was like carpeting, like a shatiach. That's the point. Malamichi Yoralan Mashtechim, Mashtechim. These fell down in like layers and layers. Oh my God, there's so much of this stuff. Now, getting back to Naaman. In one place it says Lechem, as we saw. And another place it says that it was Lishad HaShemen. So then it was like oil, like olive oil or something. And yet, on the other hand, it says, it calls it the equivalent, essentially, of dvash. So it had ta'amor ketzapichit bidvash. I mean, this is very different. Is it bread? Is it oil? Is it honey? Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, again, it depends. To young people, the na'arim, it's lechem. Zekenim that have a difficult time eating lechem, they have to get off of bread, so then it was like oil, a Mediterranean diet right there in the middle of the Midbar. And Latinokot, it tasted like honey. Ktiv Shalav, so a shalav, it's written like with a shin, it looks like, and we pronounce it, of course, Shalav. So what was it? Omar Rabbi Hanina, Tzadikim Shalav means peace and, you know, just relaxedly. So Tzadikim would eat it in peace. They felt a sense of tranquility when they ate them on. But Rishaim would eat them and it would be like eating Shalavim. Shalavim means that it tasted like thorns. It was very problematic. Okay, now there's all kinds of different levels of Shalav. Shalav are different types of that whole family. Remember, the family is basically the quail. The quail family includes a lot of very famous, delicious kinds of birds, you know. So this would include pheasant, and it would include partridge, and it would include the quail. And these are like big, nice, juicy birds. And they don't put them in a pear tree for nothing, you know. So Omer of Chanin Barava, Arba'a Mine Shalavim. So we got four kinds of shalav. And these are called the Sichli, the Kivli, the Pisuni, and what the standard shalav is. Now, the best of all of them is the Sichli. The worst of all of them is the shalav. And this is like one of these small birds, Havikit Tziporta. This is like the Tziporta bird. Tziporta, very cute. There's the, remember, the Ramban explains that the Lashon of Tzipor, we're talking about in the Dinim of Negoyim and so on. So the Ramban says that the idea of a Tzipor are those really cute birds that always are chirping early in the morning. And that's why they're called Tzipor, because Tzafra means morning, early morning. So the bird is saying good morning, Tzafra Tava, so to speak. So therefore they're called Tziporim. So anyway, those are what we're referring to over here, and they were like small things, you know. And you put them inside of an oven, you know, to make a barbecue. They used to, Rashidus, they used to put it, you know, they used to actually do that in an oven. I mean, the Pashtus would be that they would make it as a roast, but okay. V'tafach, and because it was so full of shemen, it used to like just expand until it fills the entire oven. And then you can take it and you put it on top of 13 different layers of pitot, you know, esh tanur. So you got 13 of them. The bottom one is so full of fat that you can't eat it without putting a lot of other stuff there. This is like too much fat. So achrona inan echelot al yedei ta'arovet, you have to mix it with a lot of other stuff. Now this shalav, it was not only given to Yisrael in the Midbar. This is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives tzaddikim good things to eat. So Rav Yehuda, who, when he needed something to eat, he would go between the barrels of his wine in his wine cellar, and he would find these birds hopping around in the middle of his wine. So he would just eat them. Rav Chista used to find it when he went into the garage to take out wood for his stove, so the Beit Tzivei. So he would also find the food that he should put into his stove. Anyway, Rava, he didn't even go out for it, but the sharecropper, the Oris, used to bring Rava every single day, would bring him these shalav that just showed up, and that's what he had for his food. One day, they didn't find any shalav. So Rava said, oh my God, what happened? Maybe I sinned, did something go wrong? My high. So he goes up to the roof, and he hears that in the cheder, across the street, the kids are reading the pasuk Shamati Vatirgaz Bitni. I heard the horrible news and I trembled inside. My stomach like fell out. So Rava said, oh my God, Shma Mina Noch Nafshe de Rav Chista. This shows that my Rebbe, Rav Chista, was also his father-in-law. Remember, Bat Rav Chista, he was married to. He must have been Nifter. I was never being zochet to that food because of my great Rava stuff. I was being zochet to that food because of my great Rebbe, Rav Chista. So now Rav Chista died, no more food. Now I understand. Now, in one pasuk it says, Vatal shichvat atal, and first the tal went up in the morning, and, oh my gosh, vihine, there it goes up, and there, behold, there you see al pnei hamidbar, all of this stuff that they turned out calling man. Now that means that it was underneath the layer of tal. And yet the other pasuk, remember we had ubered et tal, it says after the tal fell down, that the mun would be yored alav. Now I don't understand. Was the tal on top of the mun, or was the mun on top of the tal? Om Reb Yossi bar Reb Chanina, the mun was packaged, baby, packaged. Now this is the ultimate in convenient packaging. Not only do you not have to cut your fingers off in order to tear the plastic of the package and end up spending half your days getting stitches before you can get back to what was inside of the box, but over here, when the sun comes up, the wrapper disappears. Amazing. And there you are, left with this brand new, fresh, and protected man. Not to mention the fact that not only did they not put in that stuff to keep it desiccant, you know, which they say not for eating and so on, throw this out. By the way, never throw it out because it's very good for drying your iPhone when it falls into the toilet when your kids are playing with it. But anyway, so not only did it not have that kind of stuff, it actually had these moisturous things to keep it fresh, which we call tal. So it was great. And this was kimunach bekufsa. It was like inside of this beautiful wrapping. That was the point. Now, it says over there that they found it as dak michuspas. Now, that's a very strange lashon. The only place that we find this word michuspas. So, as you know, michuspas has come to mean today something that is a, how do you say it in English, michuspas? Like the, it's the type of paint that has, you know, a little bit of a shiny surface, but it's like, come on, what's the word in English for mechuspas? Not shiny, but, huh? You know, it's not only a sheen, it's the way that, huh? It creates a sheen, but it's because it has this uneven surface. Sorry? Speckled, yeah, speckled is close. Yeah, something like that. So, but what does it really mean, that word mechuspas? So we have different approaches. Omer Reish Lakish, davar shenimoach al pisat hayad. It's a notrikun. Read it as mechuspas. So that is moach pas. It melts on your hand, meaning that it is so delicate a kind of thing. We say melts in your mouth. This stuff would literally melt in your hand. And Rabbi Yochanan says it's a gematria, not a notrikun. And if you take the gematria, mechuspas, it equals 248. And that happens to be precisely the number of evarim in your body. And that means that it was a davar shenivla b'matayim v'arba'im v'shmona evarim. It was completely absorbed by your body. And there was absolutely no defecation that was associated with it because it was 100% pure energy and was absorbed by you directly. Says the Gemara, but that's not the right gematria. What's with you, man? Mechuspas. Mechuspas doesn't equal 248. Mechuspas equals 254. Says the Gemara, you don't know the pasuk. Mechuspas is written without the vav. Take the vav out of the 254, and what do you get? The 248, just like I said. Tana Rabbanan, lechem abirim achal ish. What is the lechem of abirim? Abirim are like the powerful ones, the greatest ones. What is abirim? This means, says Rabbi Akiva, that basically you were zeicha in the man to eat exactly the kind of food that Malachi Asharet eat. When they told Rabbi Yishmael what Rabbi Akiva said, he said to his Talmidim, will you go back and tell that Akiva guy, Akiva ta'ita, you're wrong again. Malachim don't eat. Got news for you. What do you mean they were eating the food of Malachi Asharet? V'chi Malachi Asharet ochlim lechem. V'alo kvar nemar, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the Shemayim, he says, even though I'm a human, lechem lo achalti, mayim lo shatiti. So obviously the Malachim themselves didn't eat and drink. I mean, he was just being noyeg the way the Malachim are noyeg. Elama ani mekayim abirim. What then is the meaning of abirim? Nechem shenivla b'matayim v'arba'im v'shmona evarim. That's what it means. So then, ma'ani mekayim, so then why did the Torah say that you're supposed to carry around a shovel on your backpack to cover over your defecation? Does that make sense? V'yated You're claiming that there was no need to use a bathroom. So why do you have to carry around a shovel? That was the stuff that they used to buy from Tagare Umoto, Lamo, Chrimo, Tamo. You think that people didn't come around? They've got these Jews. What do you think the Jews are going to do? They're going to buy pizza. They're going to buy whatever it is you bring them, right? So obviously they're going to be sold all of this kind of garbage food. The garbage food they had to use a bathroom for. Rebbe Elazar ben Parata Omer, nonsense. Even things that they would buy from the Tagare Umoto Olam, the mun would actually make it magically special, pure food, and mun may figan, and they wouldn't need a bathroom even for that. The only thing that we needed, yatei tiyeh lecha lazeinecha, that was after they sat around and complained about the mun. Oy, this mun is terrible, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, Ani amarti yu kemalachei hasharis. I said, let them be like malachei hasharis, as if they don't even know what it means to be human and to have to go to a bathroom. You want to be a bunch of slobs complaining about what I'm giving you? Okay, go to the bathroom. You know how far away the bathroom was if you lived on the front part of the Machaneh? 12 kilometers. Have a good time, boys. Achshav ani matriach otam shalosh parsaot. Now let them walk to the bathroom. Now you happy? The mun's going to explode. We never need a bathroom. It's outrageous. Oh, we'll teach you about needing a bathroom, my friends. Dichtiv, and that's why it says, we know that it was 12 kilometers because it says to us where the Machaneh was. So it says over here, Vayachanu ala Yarden, they camped along the Yarden from the location of Beit HaYishimot ad Evel HaShittim. Now, obviously, Evel HaShittim means exactly what it says, where they had to mourn the Shittim. So this was when they started needing to go to the bathroom, right? So, okay, so if that's, again, this is obviously where that four-letter word for defecation and comes from, right? The Evel HaShittim, they were mourning the Shittim. So Rabbi Barbar Chana said, I actually saw that place, the Didi Chosi Liyahu Atra, and I measured it, Havitlata Parsi. It was, in fact, 12 kilometers. And you need to know, okay, so you said, well, they have to go 12 kilometers? I mean, they could just go, if you were in the middle, so it was only 6 kilometers. Or if you were by the edge, you could go to the side. Not true. Because you did not have a choice. Kishenifnim, when you needed to go to a bathroom, you would not use an area that was in front of the Machaneh because you would not want people walking where you had used the place as a bathroom. Or to the sides, below the dam. The only place would be all the way behind where you had just been, and you figure, okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to turn us around a complete 180-degree turn. So because of that, if you were in the front of the Machaneh, you had no choice but to go 12 kilometers, not 6. I understand that you're telling me the maximum should be 6 if you're in the middle, either ahead or front, but that's not true. If you're right in the front, you got to go the full 12. V'ata nafshenu yivesha in kol. Oh my God, we're like parched over here. We got nothing. What were they complaining about? Amru atid man zeh shetipach b'meyam. One day this mun is going to explode us. I'm telling you, it's going to explode us. Klum yesh yilud isha shemachmis v'edom otzir. Did you ever see a mortal human being who just eats and eats and never gets anything out in the other direction? This is another brisa, obviously. So this is the same Rabbi Yishmael, but he says it in a different way now. So then, what does it mean when it says you need a shovel? That shovel was things that were ordered from Amazon. Obviously, but the things that were local, maybe he agrees also that those were Tagare Umoto Olam. I mean, otherwise, what does he have to talk about Amazon for in the middle of the desert? Because apparently he holds that even those things, the mun would be mefigan, like we said before.